Hello and welcome everybody to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and you are joining us for our 10th file, which is Fallen Angel. And we are covering episode 10 of season 1. And I am delighted to be joined for this episode by Mr. Andrew Brooker.
Hello.
It's great to have you back, mate.
It's great to be back.
Conduit was your last main file after the season 10 coverage we did a few weeks ago. So it's been a while since we did some season 1, hasn't it?
It has been quite a while, yeah. But it's been good to be able to talk season 10, though. It's, you know, something we never thought we'd be able to do, was it?
So. No. It's been brilliant, really, just being able to dip into that. And obviously, we've had a few episodes since season 10, but it's the first time you've been back on. So it's nice to go back to the beginning and start exploring until maybe we get season 11.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting as well going back to watch season 1 episodes after watching season 10. Just the difference in budget and quality is fantastic.
And how young they look.
I know.
They look good for their age, don't get me wrong, David and Gillian, but my God.
It's a big shift though, isn't it? But, you know, we're sitting watching them now and they're literally jumping back 25 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it's always good to go back and look at the beginning. So we're going to start as we mean to go on. And start looking at the latest season 1 episode, Fallen Angel.
You just made the worst mistake of your life, Agent Mulder.
I think you knocked out a filling.
I'll see to it that you pay the price for putting my men at risk.
Since when does taking pictures put anyone's life at risk?
You violated a U.S. government quarantine, and that's a federal crime.
That's a quarantine? Is that what you call this?
We're trying to contain an ecological disaster.
It's a lot of firepower just to protect Mother Nature.
I have my orders and the license to execute them as I see fit. I suggest you forget what you saw or what you think you saw for your own well-being.
We've got a downcraft in those woods, sir, and troops carrying live rounds.
We both know what's out there.
Fallen Angel is the 10th episode of the first season of The X-Files, and it aired originally on November 19th, 1993, written by Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza, and directed by Larry Shaw. It sees Mulder being informed by Deep Throat about a government cover-up of a UFO crash site, but while investigating, discovers that a fellow UFO enthusiast is also interested in the find. Out of 10 then, Andrew, where do you place Fallen Angel?
Oh, I don't think I can rate it very high, I have to admit. Probably a 5, maybe a 6, if I'm in a good mood.
Are you in a good mood? Are you going to be kind?
Yeah, we'll call it a 6. It's not the worst episode I've seen yet, but it's not a very good one either.
No, what makes it middle tier then for you?
There are a couple of things, actually. The first, it introduces a few elements that in the 9 years that follow it are never mentioned again. which is a bit frustrating, and now we're talking, we're halfway into the season, we're at a point now where even back then they knew they were going to have a full 24 episodes. They knew there was going to be, you know, some kind of budget. The least you could do is get some kind of military advisor, because man, some of the stuff towards the end of the episode and whenever they got, you know, military maneuvers going on screen, it's some of the worst stuff I've seen on telly.
It's dodgy, isn't it?
It's very bad.
It's really dodgy.
It's just and right at the end, obviously we'll talk about the end, but when they blow the doors off the building, the stuff they stick to the doors, it's freshly unwrapped plasticine. We've all seen it. We've all been in primary schools that have had those exact same blocks.
Yeah.
We all know what it is. It's freshly unwrapped plasticine that you've just stuffed a cooking thermometer into.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. However, the reception to this, though, within the writing staff and without, was actually really quite good. Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza have both said, Howard Gordon said especially, it was a pretty straight-ahead story, but Fallen Angel is an episode we're particularly proud of. And Chris Carter says, everyone keeps saying, this is my favourite episode. I think we were helped by the great direction of Larry Shaw and actor Marshall Bell, who played Henderson, was also great. I think it was very suspenseful right out of the box. You were headlong into the story and it never let up until the end. I think the episode had great effects and it enlarged our alien repertoire. Now, beyond at places, the effects, I think he's watching another episode there.
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, obviously, it does bring a lot of the underlying parts of the mythology that hang around for a while. Some of it's, things like NICAP.
Yeah.
And, those guys are introduced, and obviously Max, and Max, a little way down the line, is kind of like the precursor to the Lone Gunman.
Mm.
So things like that are great, but the actual, the overall episode that they're put into just doesn't feel particularly good.
Yeah, and I it's funny, I was thinking about 5.5 to 6, much the same as you while watching it. Weirdly enough, with Fallen Angel, it was always one of the episodes that I skipped. And oddly enough, when I first became familiar with The X-Files, of all the episodes in Season 1, it's probably the one I know the least, and it's certainly the mythology, quote-unquote, even though it's a little bit before the mythology, in a way. It's probably the mythology episode I know the least well. And so when I watched it again, a lot of it felt new to me. You know, I was like, well, it's been so long since I've watched this, and I've watched it so few times that I'm not familiar with it. And the reason is that it just sort of passes me by. You know, I'm sitting there watching it and going, okay, it is. You know, you can have it on in the background.
It does feel like a throwaway episode.
Yeah.
For an episode that does introduce quite some long-running parts of the mythology, it feels far too throwaway.
That's true, really. It's odd. It's odd in that sense, because it should have maybe had more of an impact. You know, there are elements in here that are quite important in some respects, and it doesn't really have that sense of gravitas or impact to it, which later mythology episodes, even in Season 1, managed to have. And almost feels like it was, again, like episodes like Conduit or those kind of things, it just felt a little bit more before they'd worked everything out. And it's funny enough, you know, Howard Gordon and Alex Ganser did Conduit. And I think this is, it's got more of it's got a better structure to it, I think, than Conduit, which was a bit of all over the place and a bit messy. But what it doesn't have that Conduit had was the character stuff. You know, this is very sort of one note. Until maybe the last couple of scenes, which are better than anything else in the episode, it's all very just plodding along, really, in many respects.
It feels like filler, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For a lot of it. It's interesting, you know, because Howard Gordon, he'd done 24, like, for a long time.
Yeah.
He'd done 24. So, you know, the dude knows how to structure stuff.
Yeah.
You know, to make it interesting. It's interesting that this one didn't. And like Conduit, it didn't quite feel as full on as it should have done. And I have to admit, I've got a problem with, you know, invisible aliens turning up in this episode. And more importantly, invisible ships turning up in this episode. And neither of those things ever being mentioned again.
Well, we will get to this, because there's a few interesting points there about this, definitely. We're both in agreement that it's a fairly middling episode. Let's get a bit more into the guts of this one and start exploring it. So we open with the teaser, and we've obviously got the traditional, there's been a UFO crash in the woods, in this case outside Townsend, Wisconsin, and a disposable black guy turns up who also happens to be a sheriff. Honestly, the when you look back, the racial diversity in The X-Files was very poor, you know.
And it really was.
I think this is the first time a black guy has shown up in the entire show, and he's killed within like 5 minutes.
Yep.
Mm. So, beyond that, he gets killed by a mysterious flash of light, and then we cut to a military control room where a couple of technicians are tracking what appears to be the UFO, and they are blocked by our uber evil villain of the piece, Colonel Calvin Henderson, who, short of having a twirly mustache, might as well just be a pantomime baddie.
He really is, isn't he?
He's just shit.
at this point in the series, at this point even in Season 1, you don't have to make them so... You don't have to make your bad guys so cliched.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, we've had a bit of time with Deep Throat, we've got Smoking Man, we've got plenty of actual bad guys that have got real character. You don't need the twirling mustache guy.
No.
You just don't.
No. You know what he felt like? He felt like a villain from the A-Team.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Or one of those really sort of cheesy 80s show like Airwolf. You know?
Yeah, Knight Rider.
Yeah, Knight Rider. You could have just totally took him out of that and have him just be this really gruff colonel guy who's keeping his secrets and you're going to do what I tell you, otherwise I'm going to kill you and lock your family up.
Yeah.
It's just like, mate, you're not on that show, you know? I was just like, oh, God. And I don't know about you, I just find that there's a couple of scenes where it's set in like the military centre with the radar people.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, okay, it's early days still with the show and they're still working everything out. But isn't this a little bit too inside the military for the X-Files?
Yeah, it does. And this is, again, it's another one of those problems that appears with this episode, because you don't get much more of that afterwards.
No, exactly.
If it continued on after that, it would be okay, because we'd be seeing a bit of both sides as it went on. But obviously, you can't see a bit of both sides as the conspiracy goes on, so it does feel like they're still trying to find their feet, and it just doesn't fit.
No, and you know, maybe it would have fitted better back in the day, but with the benefit of hindsight, you look back and you go, well, yeah, it's not what the X-Files was famous for the fact that it didn't show the other side of the fence, that you didn't really often know what the military people were up to or what was going on. So to actually have them in the middle of a military center tracking a UFO, like they don't know what it is, and then you've got a colonel who is just immediately shutting them down and trying to, you know, capture it. It felt really just cheesy. And I was just like, no.
I wonder actually if they just had, you know, a bunch of MP5s and bulletproof vests in the prop department that they were told they had to keep using.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Because you got the same feeling with the military stuff at the beginning of Conduit, with the air colonel that disappears.
Yeah.
Like this full-on military-style SWAT team taking over this bloody house with one dude with a bunch of boils.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it?
Completely overkill, completely over the top, absolutely not necessary. And you get the same feeling with pretty much every scene the military are in this one. Like, every single scene that requires an armed presence, Colonel Twirly Mustache brings an entire platoon with him.
Yeah.
You know, there's just... No.
No. Just stop.
Thankfully, it's something the X-Files gets rid of quite quickly.
Yeah.
You know, they definitely find their feet by the end of this season and moving on, obviously, until we get to the worst seasons towards the end of the show, but they cut out a lot of the military stuff unless it's absolutely necessary to the story.
Yeah, they cut all that shit out, didn't they? Which is good. In those scenes, though, we did have two of the kind of recurring faces that appear in the X-Files, people who played other characters. The girl who was on the radar was an actress named Kimberly Ongo, who also appeared in the episode Piper Maru and a little bit of Apocrypha as the wife of the French deep sea diver guy who gets infected by the black oil, and she gets infected. Oh, yeah. And then I think she infects Krycek at the end of that episode.
Yeah,
that's her in an earlier role. And then the other guy, the other corporal guy, an actor called Brent State, who later appeared in Tunguska and Terma as a domestic terrorist called Terry Edward Mayhew, who Mulder goes to get some information on the Tunguska rock.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, we haven't got any celebrity spots really in this episode, but there's a few interesting appearances. Obviously, then before the teaser ends, we've got the quite cool name for a downed UFO, which is Fallen Angel, obviously the name of the episode. I do like that. I think that's quite a cool code name for a UFO.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty good. And then obviously the alien itself, this unseen, slightly invisible alien, which you mentioned. Now, immediately, what I started to question was, and this is where I get into full X-Files nerd territory, are these the standard aliens that we come to know, the Greys, you know, the alien invaders, or are they different? Because there's two sides to look at it. On the one hand, the Greys never seem to be invisible, but then at the same time, they do kill people with radiation, and this is what this creature does. And their ships, the Grey ships, can turn invisible, as we've seen in several episodes. We saw most recently in My Struggle in season 10. So are they the same? Or you seem to get frustrated by this, because it seems like a discrepancy, doesn't it?
It does frustrate me a little bit, and mainly because I don't go full on nerd over it. but you kind of, when you watch it, especially when you watch it now, you know, because obviously you've got bigger TVs than what we had when these things first came out.
Yeah.
So now when you look at it, you know, on a nice big TV, you can see all the detail.
On Blu-ray that, as well.
Yeah, that invisible thing is a bit of a fat bastard.
Yes, he is, actually.
You know.
It's true.
He's not a little, you know, like the Greys are quite small and quite lean, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and even, you know, up to when we've got the bounty hunters and that, they're humanoid, but they're not fat. And this thing actually looks like it has a belly on it.
It's but, just an alien who's had one too many pies.
Well, that's it. You know, he's been down there one too many times attacking Wendy's. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking too much into it and I'm just watching a thing that's been stretched out from 4 to 3 to 16 to 9 on Blu-ray. But I don't know. They don't look like, obviously all we ever see is like an outline, like the Predator.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what they're going for, I think, a little bit, isn't
it? Yeah, they've definitely got that Predator look about it. And it's definitely inspired by Predator. But you get that feeling that it doesn't look like the ones we've dealt with in the past or we'll deal with in the future.
Mm. Yeah.
But at the same time, we're not told in either direction. And again, it's never brought up again. Oh yeah, once we had these invisible aliens once.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Yeah. You never see anything like this again in the show, do you?
You never have, you know, any of them, you know, Deep Throat, Mr. X, Cigarette Smoking Man, none of them going, oh yeah, don't worry about him, he was something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true, and you know, when you were shown that it's very beholden to a mythology and a continuity, to have something like that is a bit jarring, because in the end, they do try and start tying everything together. And when you've got something that's glaringly completely different, it's a bit like the old, which we covered recently, the alien ghost in space.
Yes.
Which again is another, I mean, it's absolute bobbins anyway, all that stuff, but, you know, that was clearly an alien. Right, it wasn't a ghost, it was an alien, because they found it on the fucking moon or whatever. So it's like, well, yeah, all these little things, just, they do get to continuity nerds, certainly like me.
I mean, and clearly, I genuinely know I'm just being a pedantic ass about it, and I know full well that they got two-thirds of the way through this season, and they started tying up everything they could, and for the most part, after season one, even if it's very loosely, everything kind of ties in. But when you watch something so many times, and it doesn't matter what you watch, whether it's X-Files, I do it every other day with friends.
Mm.
You know, when you can pick continuity holes like that, and you go, it grates after a little while. And things like that, just, they grate on my nerves, something chronic.
So after the teaser, we're into the main story. And one thing I did clock before we actually get to the first scene is in the slug line, which is obviously saying that it's a motel that Mulder's at to begin with. It says day one in that slug line. And I did you see day two later on? Because I don't remember seeing day two, do you?
No, I don't. And I actually, because I've watched this one twice in the last couple of days, mainly just to kind of refresh myself on it, more because I've been watching a lot of season 10 over and over and over again. So, and each time, either I completely lost interest or I just missed it, but I never saw day two.
No, I didn't. And I was like, oh, what was that about? You see, it was this whole thing that they tried to do and they failed to do throughout the episode, which was to build a sense of time against Mulder, that he's operating on the clock. And you never got that throughout this, pretty much. You know, you never got the sense that he was racing to cover something up. You know, at the beginning, obviously, you've got this quite a nice little flashback mini scene where Mulder's getting ready to go and infiltrate the base, and you flash back to Deep Throat giving him the spiel of what's going on and the UFOs crashed and everything, and sets up the classic idea that we saw then loads of times in the X-Files of Mulder having, like, you've got Deep Throat going, you've got 48 hours to get in there.
Yeah.
Terrible impression, but there you go. You've got to get in there, you've got to find this, otherwise, and it's gone. But I think that it immediately is trying to build up that sense of suspense that isn't there for me.
Yeah, I think the problem with that is they tried too hard to build up that sense of suspense and the sense of time. So obviously we've got in the, you know, in the opening, it says day one, and then we've got Deep Throat telling Mulder he's only got 24 hours. And then obviously a little bit later down the line, we've got Scully insisting that he gets back because he's going to run out of time to get back and defend the X-Files. And there is this kind of, there are like three different elements trying to push this suspense and how everybody is running against the clock, but no one seems to feel in a particular hurry.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
During the episode.
Yeah. And Scully only ever mentions that a couple of times. She happens to just say at various points, "Oh, by the way, you've got to get back because Section Chief McGrath wants your guts on the on a stick." Yeah. And
don't forget, just in case you've got a bit of time, would you mind getting back before you lose your job?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a little bit. Well, shouldn't there be more?
There's no sense of urgency to any of it.
There's no urgency. Yeah, and it's like, well, where's that coming from? Which is a shame because, there are some nice touches. I do think that Larry Shaw directs it fairly well. The whole thing of flashing back with Deep Throat and doing it that way is, he's reasonably well executed. And, the whole story, whenever Mulder goes undercover and he's sneaking in places, that's always fun. He does that quite often throughout the show. And in this case, it's a bit James Bond Mission Impossible-y, when he's holding on undervans, and as they drive in and he's rolling out and climbing through bushes and... It's a different vibe to what we're normally getting on the show at this point, where they're investigating cases and they're going to crime scenes. Immediately, obviously Scully's not there for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and it's Mulder on his own, off book, going and finding his quest. And that was a quite nice change of pace, admittedly.
Yeah, and it done a very similar thing that they tried to do with Conduit as well, which was push his personal thing as well as just. The whole FBI thing. This one was his story. This one was, like you say, his quest.
Mm.
This was all about Mulder because, the FBI had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. They're completely out of it in some respects anyway. And I think that when he gets to finally, after doing a bit of a sneaking round, when he does get to the actual alien ship crash, I did think that set was very good. It looks especially good on Blu-ray, where they're obviously putting all the, the smoke onto the ship and trying to cool it down, and it's underneath like big canopies, and you see these angular bits sticking out of the ground and stuff. I did think that was quite a good set, I have to say.
It did look good because what it didn't do was it wasn't glaring. It wasn't like at the beginning of season 10. There wasn't half a ship hanging out the floor. There was. You kind of had to look at it at an angle to see if you were actually seeing what you thought you were seeing.
Mm, mm.
And it puts you in Mulder's position quite nicely, because obviously, he's got to try and figure out what he's seeing as well without getting too close.
Yeah.
And it gets that sense of, really, is that what we're looking at?
Mm.
It picks that up quite well.
That is true. You do get that feeling. I don't know about you, though. I thought the moment he starts taking photos, I thought, why are you even bothering? You're never getting them developed.
No.
And obviously he doesn't, and then he gets clocked and, captured. But it's just like, why bother? But you see, this day and age, this is why it's a shame. He could take photos of that, put them on the cloud, and they,
it doesn't matter what happens, it'll have them somewhere.
They'll have them somewhere, instead of, Henderson getting hold of the film and stripping the film and like he does later.
But, of course, we've all seen how that worked out for him, haven't we? Him and his camera phone.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yes. If you haven't seen Mulder and Scully Meet the Weird Monster and seen how Mulder handles the camera phone, get on it, because it's beautiful. So, yeah, obviously he gets captured by Henderson, who he's being his traditional stock, gruff, cheesy bad guy, as we talked about earlier. And he gets thrown into a cell and meets the other main player in the story, who's Max Fennig, played by Scott Bellis, who... Immediately, you said it earlier, but immediately, he's like a proto-lone gunman, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's lone gunman version one, isn't he?
Yeah. In a way, I know obviously at the end he disappears, but in a way I thought I'm surprised they didn't bring him back and have him be one of them, actually. Because I think he could have worked as a recurring person to pop up again. I mean, we do see Max Fennig again, obviously. They frame a whole two-parter around Max eventually.
Yeah, he comes back for Tempest Fugit, doesn't he?
He does. And then Max, in season 4, which is two far better episodes than this one. But, and they're,
it's
looking...
a big gap, though, isn't it, for a character that turns out to actually be quite important?
Yeah, in terms of, being somebody who is, and we get a bit more of this later on in the episode, being somebody who's a bit like a Mulder, a version of Mulder, but just in a different place, in a kind of different way he does things. It's just weird they didn't bring Max Fennig back before they did, or have him more recurring. It does make you wonder. And
I have to say though, some of his dialogue in this episode leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah,
you know, it's you know, and again, we're at this point where we're halfway through the season. We know there's conspiracy stuff going on, so when he comes out and says, you know, after what happened to JFK, who can blame you? What? What has that got to do with anything?
Yeah, and Mulder's, what I didn't quite get exactly, and what I didn't quite get was Mulder looking at him like he's mad. You know, Mulder's just staring at him going like, who the fuck are you? You know, that's not what he'd do. He'd immediately start questioning him and going, well, what do you know? What have you seen? Instead of just staring at him until he proves himself. That's not what Mulder does.
No.
Well, obviously, the whole idea is that Max, at the beginning of the episode, is played for comic relief more than anything else. And it's only then later on that we get a bit more depth to him. But we will, of course, get to that. He just disappears, and then Mulder manages to get out when Scully comes and rescues him, bails him out, basically. And she does say, I think, one of the daftest explanations of what's going on that she gets to say, which is that she's been told it's a Libyan jet with a nuke. Mulder even says it, what, over US airspace, you stupid cow? Are you serious?
We'd all think the same thing as, oh, when we go, really? You know, think that's what's going on here?
Even when you've got a possible alien craft, I still think that's more believable than a Libyan jet, even in 1993.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, can the Libyans even fly that far? It's like,
even if they can't, I mean, Wisconsin's pretty far inland.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Why would you take a nuke to Wisconsin? You know, if you're going to, I mean, obviously, you know, it's not funny to talk about attacks on American soil because of obviously some of the things that have happened. But the idea is ridiculous. But and I was like, oh, come on, Scully, you're being skeptic for the sake of it here. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, she's a little too gullible.
Yeah,
for a scientist, for an FBI agent, for any number of things, she shouldn't believe that and wouldn't believe that.
It doesn't make much sense. She does, of course, although, you know, highlight the fact that Mulder's going out on a limb and he's risking the X-Files. And there's a new guy called Section Chief McGrath who's after his blood, who you get to mention. And you know, get a nice bit of tension there. But this is the thing with this episode. That should have been really constant all the way through. And like we said, she only pops up every now and then and says, oh, by the way, you need to go back because you're going to get sacked. Yeah. It's not there enough. So, you know, there's some good bit of tension in this scene, but it doesn't follow through the same way. Because obviously, you know, Mulder gets out. And at this point, the alien manages to jump his protective laser grid and his way off with that little weird electronic sound.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Sounds like someone's just attached a hairdryer to a skateboard with a camera on it.
Well, you know what? They may have done that. You know, they didn't have all the budget, did they?
No, they were pretty lo-fi back then.
It's entirely possible. I immediately was thinking, again, going back to the nerdy stuff, if it is the same alien race and they can camouflage their UFOs, maybe whoever this is has got some sort of, you know, camouflage suit or some camouflage tech that means they can just turn invisible. You know, like a personal cloaking device kind of thing. Did make me wonder that, really. But who knows? Who knows? They don't even know the writers. Why am I even guessing?
No, sir, I don't think they ever knew, did they? They never quite figured it out. Yeah.
So this, obviously, you know, they go back to Mulder's hotel room, and this is where they find Max again, who's trying to get out. And he obviously knows who Mulder is through his travel expenses through the Freedom of Information Act, which is quite funny. I did quite like that. You could imagine Max trawling through that kind of shit, really.
Just seems like a really boring way to live, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to look through someone's travel receipts and say where they've been.
This guy went to a harvester. There must be something special about that one.
Wouldn't that be great if all he ever finds is where Mulder and Scully have eaten after their cases? All the restaurants they've been to.
We've seen him in some pretty bad bars as well, man.
We have. But yeah, you know, we get to see Mulder's pseudonym for articles he's been writing, which is the brilliantly cloaked MF Luder. Yeah. Oh, come on. You know, I always think back to the one that Cigarette Smoking Man has in Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man, when he writes the books, his pseudonym is Raoul Bloodworth, which is brilliant. Yeah. That's a proper pseudonym, you know.
Sounds like he should be writing detective novels.
Yeah, exactly. I think he was actually in that.
Yeah.
And then M.F. Luder. it's just so shit.
It's not like, even a good anagram. No. It's like two letters spun round. And
yeah, it's like he's sitting there going, I can't do anagrams. I'm just going to put any old shit. So, oh my God, it just made me laugh. So then we obviously get to see Max's little, what's the best, Winnebago, I suppose is the best thing to call it. You know, his camper van. That he's got everything. He lives in his trailer, I suppose is the right word. Yeah. And we obviously get to see this again in season four, his trailer. But right now he shows them the audio of the sheriff who was killed in the woods. So they get that lead and they go off to find the sheriff's wife, you know, who's basically in a bit of a sheltered place. She doesn't really want anyone's help. And I do think this was a good element just to have, just as a scene. Because that sheriff just gets disposed of very quickly. So to have his wife and his child, and she turns around and says, well, you know, the government said that if I speak about anything, that they will take my husband's pension away and I've got to look after my kid. I like that because I thought that added a little bit of humanity to a very robotic mythology episode.
Yeah, and it added a lot to what should be, or what was absolutely meant to be, a throwaway character.
Mm.
Just somebody to kill off at the beginning.
Yeah.
They've actually, you know, to give him a family and to, you know, a struggling family at that. So, you know, they're clearly going through something because they've lost him. It was a good little moment to have, and which meant he wasn't just, you know, like your first dead body in a CSI episode.
I like that. I thought that was a nice little scene that I thought added something. Then, of course, you know, we're back to evil villain Henderson and his crew, Operation Falcon, who are, you know, stock military boars who go off and trying to storm the building to find the escaped alien who they're hunting down. And they all get, you know, toasted a bit, really, which, you know, is fairly okay done. But I think what struck me with this scene is, I don't know if you noticed this, Mark Snow's score is so John Carpenter.
Yes, it is.
Because he's going, doo, 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 yeah, doo. It's like the thing. Doo, doo.
Yeah.
I was loving that. I thought, why didn't he do this more? Obviously, Mark Snow's music is always good, but I did like the John Carpenter bits here. Although he should have done them in ice, which was basically the thing.
Yeah. It did feel like he was kind of still experimenting with different types of, different bits of music he could use, isn't it?
Mm.
Like everybody else was, still trying to find his feet in this thing that was about to last 10 years and keep him very, very busy. He needed to, you know, play around and make sure that he got everything right. And I think that kind of is the way this episode has ended up, you know, ended up being. It was a trial episode for a lot of different things, like, you know, invisible aliens and electro synth John Carpenter music.
Yeah, yeah. And funnily enough, one other strain of music that struck me was one he uses to much more memorable effect in the Anasazi Blessing Way trilogy, which obviously is one of the most epic stories in the entire show. It's just, it's hard to just describe, but whenever Henderson's on the screen, there's this sort of echoing sort of, you know, sound like,
oh yeah.
And he uses that a lot in Anasazi, and it works really well. So yeah, experimentation is definitely the order of the day. I think you're absolutely right there. So yeah, obviously Operation Falcon are toast thanks to the escaped Gribbley, and they end up going into a hospital where Mulder and Scully, luckily, are already looking into, you know, finding out about the radiation exposure with the doctor, Dr. Oppenheim, who's a bit afraid to give information. Again, I quite like that, you know, that it was a doctor who was a bit worried about getting in trouble. I thought that added a nice little shot. I quite like this guy, actually, because he ends up then, later, standing up to Henderson. When the soldiers are brought in, he basically turns around to Henderson and says, right, if you don't like the way I do things, fuck off.
Yeah.
We'll do it my way here. And I thought, good for you, because Henderson's just been a dick all the way through, so it's nice to actually get to, you know,
someone to put him in his place. It was quite nice, wasn't it?
It was a nice little thing, nice little element. But I did wonder, I don't know about you, why did they end up going to a standard hospital?
I've got no idea.
Because they're like a top secret military unit who are hunting down an escaped alien, and they get brought into the local general. It's like, well, wouldn't they not go to a military hospital, like by Super Chopper or,
somewhere near maybe the camp that they were already on.
Right, which surely must have some sort of medical bay. I did think that was a bit contrived, really. But again, maybe I'm reading too much into a story that doesn't deserve it.
I think it's one of those things that we've said this before. It's one of those things you're just not supposed to think about it.
Mm.
You know, maybe it was, you know, the hospital was next door, perhaps.
Yeah.
And it was just the nearest thing to them. I don't think you can read too much into it. Clearly, it's something they've forgotten to consider.
Yeah.
When they're putting the episode together. Because, yeah, any big military outfit like that, whether it was top secret or not, would have some form of doctor on site, especially the fact that they've just turned up because someone else has just been burnt to a crisp by God knows what.
Mm.
You know, you'd have your own little crispy critter help section, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd think so.
You wouldn't go to the local A&E.
No, exactly, yeah. Oh, I've got a nasty burn over 90% of my body. I better pop down to the local,
If you just take a seat, sir, we'll be with you in about 5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a bit daft. Obviously, though, Scully is, you know, corralled into staying and helping treat the men who are surely going to die. And Mulder goes off to find Max again, and Max is having a fit. And this is the point where Scully had already... There was a little bit of a signature of this. Scully had already clocked some medication earlier in the trailer. So there was some foreshadowing for Max having a seizure, and this is where he gets a bit more depth. He doesn't just become like the very Canadian sounding comic relief that he is earlier. And he talks about how, you know, all his life he's had weird experiences where he's woken up and didn't know where he was. And then he finds, Mulder sees he's got a red scar behind his ear. So it's like an alien abduction sign. One of the many kind of scars that people have always had about, you know, alien implants and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, I thought this scene was good because it did just deepen Max a little bit. And I thought that was good.
Yeah, it was good that, you know, it wasn't like kind of what tended to happen with alien abductees, whether it was in the show or just, you know, in magazines. It was people go, oh, look what I've got because I was clearly abducted. This was Mulder discovering it.
Mm.
And Max, for the most part, probably didn't even know it was there.
Yeah.
And it was a nice little moment for this, you know, for Mulder to go, you know, there's something more to this. Maybe Max himself doesn't know that there's something more to this.
Because he says as much, Mulder says as much, doesn't he, that Max doesn't know he's an alien abductee.
He does, He says, you know, he believes he's an abductee, not, you know, Max hasn't said a thing, Mulder believes it.
And then obviously we get that clarified when the weird alien turns up into his trailer and starts making his ear bleed, which is quite a creepy little visual. I did like actually the way that they filmed that alien, because it was, to some extent, it was a bit daft, but in other respects, you know, in a way, it did feel a little bit under your skin. I quite liked it. I thought it was just weird enough to work.
Yeah, it works very well, in as much as when it is zipping around and, you know, squeeing around the forest map. It's easy enough to put you in its position without really an awful lot of effort, which worked quite well.
Yeah, I think it only really drops the ball when we get to the cliffhanger, the climax, where Mulder and Scully go and basically pursue Max into this this warehouse where the alien is also, and Max is all disoriented and everything like that. And Scully feigns a bluff, goes outside. Henderson's being all cackly villain, going, I've got them now. And then obviously the alien's in there. And I thought the point it just got a bit silly was when the alien sort of blows Mulder across the warehouse in a really shit slow-mo.
Yeah, just kind of bitch slaps him across the...
Yeah.
Across the room, whereas everybody else he's come up against, he's set fire to them.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was about to say. Why doesn't he fry Mulder like everybody else? That makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. And see, that's one of those unforgivable things that you can't quite get over.
Yeah.
You know, you do go, well, you clearly didn't know where to go with this.
Yeah. And you just thought, let's just twat him one, and that'll be fine.
The silly predator backhand. It didn't fit at all.
No. It was very contrived in order to get to the point where we see the admittedly good visual of Max being abducted, which whenever you used to see the clip shows in the 90s, that was always one of the clips that you'd see of Max. It was, wasn't it? Where he's like, you know, he's shaking and he's being abducted. That was good.
How old it is, it doesn't look entirely crap.
No, it doesn't. It still works, actually. It's still quite a good effect. And I did like that. And it, you know, that's basically where that ends. Although there was absolutely no conclusion to Henderson, was there? He's just outside, and that's it, really.
Yeah, you know? That's it. Just, you know, Max is gone. You know, we're just going to pack up and go home.
Yep, basically. I mean, he might have been shit, but at least they could have had some, you know, scene of, even if it's Mulder coming out the warehouse saying to Henderson, "You're a dick," you know, effectively. And then he's like, "Pack up, boys. Our work is done," you know. Something like that. But anyway, I'm not going to lose too much sleep over that, because then we get to the final couple of scenes, which for me, actually, this is where the episode is punching above its weight, because I think you get two really good scenes here. Well, kind of three. You've got the scene of Scully at the OPR meeting, which I thought was really well directed, because it's very stylized in that she looks very much on her own down this weird, almost tapering in table.
Yeah.
I thought that was really well directed by Larry Shaw, because it really emphasizes how Scully is away and alone and, you know.
And how small she is in comparison to the organization she's up against.
Exactly. I thought that was really well done. Although I did keep thinking, well, why isn't this like Blevins from like the first couple of episodes? Because he was a section chief and he was the one who was looking into all this. So where's this McGrath guy come from?
I don't know. I think this is because we've mentioned Blevins before, haven't we? Where he appeared and then didn't appear again for ages.
Yeah, like five seasons.
Yeah, I think it, and I reckon it might fall into that same. You know, they're still playing with ideas at this point because we haven't had Skinner yet, have we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we're still, you know, testing the water and seeing what we can and can't get away with for. You know, for bosses, for these people, and it took them three different people before they realized, well, actually, we can't have sinister bad guys as their direct boss.
Yeah.
Because it isn't going to last if that's what we do.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, it could quite easily have been McGrath in Tombs, couldn't it? You know, but, you know, logically, you would have assumed that McGrath was going to crop up again after this.
Yeah. I mean, they do say that McGrath steps over Blevins, didn't they? She said that early on in the episode.
Oh, did she? I missed that.
Yeah. She said that he'd stepped over Blevins to take charge.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good then. I'd missed that.
But literally, I think that was written in just to say, right, we're going to try this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right then.
Mm. Other guy didn't work. Let's give this one a go. And, well, he didn't. He lasted even
less time. Well, you know, he's a bit more, at first he seems a bit more badass and gruff, but then, to be fair, Mulder just comes in and just shouts him the fuck down, you know, and he from that, I mean, it was brilliant. He just doesn't give a shit when he goes in there, and he's like, "You're all wrong, I've got the proof, you're all bastards." It's brilliant. I was just there going, fucking hell, this is great, you know.
It was a good scene, because he's a, you know, the new guy, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
Like, this big, like, authority figure, he's a massive dude. Yeah, you know, he looks like a London gangster's debt collector.
Yeah, he's a bit of a tank, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, for Mulder to shout him down is actually, it's a really good scene.
It is, but what it also does, I think, is take away the idea of McGrath being able to be their boss.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that Mulder could never do was he could never have done that to Skinner.
No.
Because Skinner would have just bitch slapped him down and gone, "Mulder, shut the fuck up." You know what I mean? He wouldn't have taken any of that shit. Certainly not at the beginning.
No.
Whereas McGrath, he just basically you know, smacks him down and says, you know, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth. Boom! He might as well have just dropped a mic at that point and just stormed out. Well, hobbled out, because he's on crutches, isn't he?
Well, but, yeah.
But,
I think the thing is, yeah, because McGrath kind of, he tries to, you know, to be big and shouty, which is something Blevins wasn't.
Mm.
So, you know, this guy's big and powerful and shouty and screamy, and just Mulder comes in shoutier and screamier, and just he's the louder of the two today.
Yeah, and it works, you know. Yeah. Weirdly enough, it's almost like if only the episode had had that sort of urgency and power and pace, it would have been really good. You know,
that if it had any of that tension through the previous 43 minutes, it would have been okay.
It would have kicked ass, whereas it only really takes off in the last 5 minutes. And then you've got the final scene, which is McGrath going and reporting to Deep Throat, who has basically turned around and said, no, you're not sacking him. Sorry. And obviously now, you know, we know enough to know that Deep Throat is playing McGrath. But at the time, you would have genuinely gone, well, okay, is Deep Throat basically just keeping Mulder on dangling on a string? You know, it's a really nice way of clouding Deep Throat's motives, isn't it?
Yeah, there was very much a treading a thin wire element to... You just didn't know if he was a good... You still at this point didn't know if he was a good guy or a bad guy, or, you know, if he was on our side, if, you know, should we be cheering for what he's just done, or should we be angry because he's done it? They were still, you know, for all the faults for this episode, they, you know, Deep Throat, he was only in it for like 35 seconds in total.
Yeah.
He was still one of the most powerful characters in the episode.
Yeah, because he bookends the whole thing. You know, he sets Mulder off on the entire course of it, and then at the end he saves his bacon. But, again, is he doing it? He uses the Godfather quote, doesn't he? Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. Yep. And it's that whole thing of, okay, well, maybe Mulder is his enemy and he's doing that. In a way, it's almost like the Smoking Man role. You know, in later seasons, you would have had McGrath reporting to the Smoking Man and saying that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, and the Smoking Man goes, yes, keep your friends close, enemies closer. You can imagine the Smoking Man saying that as well.
Yeah, see, at this point, you've got, you know, Deep Throat's on almost a par with Smoking Man because, you know, he's keeping him around because he knows he's the better of the two evils.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And obviously, in the end, we know that Deep Throat was willing to die for him, whereas Smoking Man's the baddie. But, like, you know, it nicely clouds everything. So, that, again, those last two or three scenes, gold, really good.
Yeah.
The rest of it, very, very going on the motions, plodding. And like you said, very, very still figuring things out, still playing with ideas, throwing things at the wall and seeing what stick.
In the grand scheme of things, it's a forgivable episode, I think, for that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one episode at 207. It's not the worst episode there has been. And if you just sat and watched the Mythology episodes, it probably wouldn't be too bad. But at the time watching it, and again, just watching it today as a standalone episode, it's still quite poor.
In terms of Mythology, definitely, it's very low tier. But then it's not even really Mythology. It's sort of pre-Mythology. It's sort of slightly Mythology. So,
yeah,
it can be forgiven for that. And it's a decent watch. It's just not particularly memorable apart from one or two elements. So, yeah, that was Fallen Angel. A nice in-depth look at that. And we're now going to move on, and I'm going to do the usual Do You Believe In section, where I'm going to ask you, Andrew, today whether or not you believe in a specific element of paranormality relating to the episode. So, Andrew, do you believe in government cover-ups?
Yeah. I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, I don't necessarily think that it's as bad as it shows in the X-Files, but yeah, there's got to be some things that are kept away from us. To stop panic, if nothing else.
To prevent mass hysteria.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I do. I think I'd be silly not to. I think it would be naive to think that we're told everything, you know, and get plain truth for everything, because that's not what people want. People don't want the truth. People want nice, cozy answers that make them feel better.
It's true. Like Max Fennig mentions JFK... What do you think that's a classic cover-up, that they know potentially who did it?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Are you afraid they're listening and they will find you if you say yes?
Well, this, you know, it is possible. Although, you know, if they're going to come to the depths of Milton Keynes to sort out an issue like that, well, I think we might be onto something.
I was going
to
say, if anything proves JFK, it's that they come to Milton Keynes to silence you.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they must, by this point, they must know an answer, and they just aren't telling us and letting us. I think the general public are happy with conspiracy theories because it keeps us not worrying about what actually is happening.
Yeah, that the truth is scarier than the conspiracies, basically.
Yeah. Much scarier than the fiction that we make up for ourselves trying to figure out the truth.
Which really was the old underlying idea of the latest X-Files series, wasn't it, really? That there's a darker truth beyond the one that seems to be the most sinister.
Yeah, that not everybody, you know, as much as you say you might want it, not everybody wants to hear it. Not everybody wants to know that level of truth.
It could be the case. So, you know, it's there's a lot of things out there that have been supposedly covered up, from ranging from JFK to Roswell to, you know, the death of Osama bin Laden to 9/11 to pretty much every major thing that has happened. That's there's been a little bit of question mark on. There is a cover up theory or a conspiracy theory around it, and I think that, you know, it's probably, again, like with everything, there's a bit of truth in everything, but then it's just extrapolated and built up and blown up into greater proportions from a simpler truth.
We as TV consumers, we let people like Fox News and the BBC do our thinking for us and plant, you know, even more fantastical ideas into our heads.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day the truth will be known.
Yeah.
And it will be when they turn up on your doorstep and we never see you again.
Can I mention JFK one too many times?
Okay, finally, we're getting to your most exciting part of any episode, Andrew, and it's the X quiz.
Well, the thing is, right, this is great because I wrote a shitload of notes thinking, right, I'm going to get these. And the problem is, almost everything I've written, we've talked about already, so I know it's not going to come up. So now I'm scared.
Ah, well, you never know. You never know. I might have done that classic, let's mention everything and see how much he picks up. We'll see. So, are you ready for 5 questions on Fallen Angel?
Yeah, go on, him.
Okie dokie, let's go. Question 1. Using the alias MF Luder, still laughing at that, what is Mulder's article on in the magazine Omni?
Oh, for crying out loud.
And Max Fennig mentions this at one point.
Yeah, I wrote down the magazine that was Omni. I didn't write down the article. Bollocks.
Oh dear, I'm always one step ahead.
Yeah. No, not a clue.
Okay, it was the Gulf Breeze sightings.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. You're close. You got one possible answer. Not question 2. What medicine is Max Fennig being prescribed that Scully sees on the bottle?
Oh, Christ knows. I spotted it and thought, nah, he's not going to ask that. No.
Never underestimate the little things I pick up on.
The quiz is a fiendish.
I know. I always thought they were easy, but no. It is called Melaril, and it's an antipsychotic, I think she says, later on. So
schizophrenic, or they think he's schizophrenic.
That's it, yeah. Okay, question 3. Now, this is effectively a 50-50, so this is guesswork. Question 3. Does Mulder, when he's talking to Max, think that Project Argus is real or a fraud?
Real.
Does Mulder think that Project Argus is real or a fraud?
All right, and go on, it's a fraud.
Well done. I've got to get you 1 point, otherwise I will hate myself. The quiz has officially been bent. The rules have been bent. Question 4. What Air Force base can Max intercept transmissions from on a clear day?
Whitmarsh.
Yes. Well done, sir. Excellent. Good share. Whitmarsh Air Force Base, which is mentioned by the radar operator later as well. Okay, and finally, question 5. What's the excuse for the cover-up in Wisconsin that Scully sees at the end in the paper?
Oh, crap. The one that's in the paper?
Yeah.
No.
It's not a Libyan jet.
No, it's not. If it's the one in the paper, it's not the Libyan jet. No. I can't remember it.
It's a toxic spill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, those were quite hard, I think.
I mean, no. You would not believe the crap I've got written down here.
Give me some examples.
I've gotten written down the amount of man-made objects there are in space.
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, I'm gutted I didn't ask that one, actually. That's a really good... So is it like something like 7,400
and... It's 7,087.
Oh, that's... That, yeah.
And
that's...
I've got that written right underneath how many miles up the electric fence around the United States goes.
So you've got really good questions. What we should do is that you do this and you question me next time. That's not a bad idea, actually. We should do that next time we do one. And you can put me through the same torture that I put everyone else through.
Well, I've got all sorts. Because the one that keeps coming up, or that's come up a couple of times in quizzes, is the like place names.
Mm.
So I've got everything: Townsend, Wisconsin. I've got the Budget Rest Motel.
I nearly had that one. I did nearly put the motel in, actually. Yeah.
I've got everything. I've got the brand of trailer that the Max Fenig's got.
Everything except the answers to my
everything
questions.
Except the fucking answers I needed. Wow. Well, I would be absolutely useless on a real-life game show.
Well, maybe not. Maybe just, you know, I should never be a question writer for those game shows.
Oh, yeah. I've also got the name of the US microwave substation, the substation B-21.
Oh, wow. You see, I missed that one completely.
And I've got the, and I've actually written down, I thought this one might come up, the quote comes from Godfather 2.
Oh, literally, yeah,
I wrote, not Godfather 1.
Well, well done for that. Well done for the homework. Keep doing it, because one day this is going to pay off and you're going to get all five.
I do fill up pages and pages whenever I do these.
It will pay off. This method will pay off, I promise. Unfortunately, today you've scored 2 out of 5.
That's not that good.
Well, you've still got to beat 3, so
yeah.
Better luck next time, and I apologise.
That's all right. Well, it's hardly life or death now, is it?
That's true. That's true. Not like JFK. No, you know, you have been warned. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the latest X-Cast covering Fallen Angel. We will be back to take on the next episode, episode 11, which is Eve. So we're dealing with some spooky children next time and some weird science. Andrew, you'll be back at some point down the road to cover some more S1 episodes. So huge thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on.
Brilliant. Always a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Where can we find you hunting around the internets?
Hunting around the internet, I spend almost all of my time on Twitter. I'm at Brooker411, where I tend to just talk out of my ass for a large percentage of the time, and on occasion I talk about films.
And on Foul Critics as well.
I do, yeah. I spend some time on Foul Critics podcast, and I write a lot of their reviews as well. So, yeah, I tend to hang around in those kind of circles a lot.
Yeah, and you've appeared on Pick a Flick, which is the other Black Hole Media podcast. A few times.
Yeah, I have a couple of times. That,
yeah. So, awesome. Thank you. You can find the X-Cast on Twitter at the X_cast and on Facebook at the X-Cast. And you can find us on iTunes. If you just type in the X-Cast, please do subscribe. Give us a rating. Give us a review. That will boost us up and get us increasingly known. And, you know, leave us some feedback. Let us know what you think. You can email us as well at thexfcast@gmail.com. Talk to us about the show. Tell us what you think of the episodes. Not just our episodes, but the episodes of the show as well. Get some feedback going. Always happy to hear from people. And if you are ever interested in being a guest, just drop us a line and we'll include you in the big email when we sign people up for episodes. It's always nice to get new people on the show. And we will hopefully have some new people coming on as the year develops. So yeah, look us up there. And we're also part of the Black Hole Media podcast network, which is at Black Hole Media on Twitter. So yeah, give us a follow. So again, thanks, Andrew.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Cheers. It's been great. And remember, guys, until next time, trust no one.